Good morning, welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. This is BRN AM for Wednesday, November 15th, 2023. And our top story today, pooled employer plans, understanding employer fiduciary responsibilities, and ensuring compliance with all operational requirements. Joining me now to discuss this and a lot more, Michelle Lacaze is with July Business Services, and Peter Swisher is a senior CFAX analyst with Broadridge. Peter, Michelle, great to see you. Thanks so much for joining us on the program this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you both here. And we're talking about PEPs and the evaluation of a pooled plan provider and a PEP. PEPs were part of the, I'm going to call it the OG Secure Act. So this is the original Secure Act. And I want to start off by asking you the size of the PEP market today, because it really has exploded.
Yeah, I think we're up to around 400 PEPs that are registered with the Department of Labor. And if you trace it back, the OG Secure Act, as you called it, Secure 1.0, as I've been calling it, published at the end of 2019, the first PEPs became possible January 1st, 2021. I think at that time, there were a handful of early adopters who put out programs, a handful of pooled plan providers who registered with the Department of Labor, and then during that year launched programs. But in year one, there were a couple dozen programs, and then it's been growing. And like I said, now I think around 400. The Department of Labor estimated that there would be 3,200 pooled plan providers in their regulation. I don't know where they got that number. I still question it. But too early to say, assets and counts, but I think it's fair to say it's growing. There's a segment of the marketplace here that believes this is the right solution for their clients.
And just to follow up on that, Pete, and I want to come to you in a second, Michelle, about the fiduciary responsibilities. But I mean, Pete, this is really the Congress, when they created this rule, really the goal here is to expand retirement access. We've got 50 million Americans, depending on who calculates it, right, that don't have access to a retirement plan. This legislation is specific to getting those people into a plan, providing a plan, and eliminating those high costs, which would occur if you had your own solo plan.
That was definitely the intent. And if you go back 10 years, I was part of the government affairs effort that with the industry that saw Congress wrangling through all this stuff starting in about 2010, 2011, 2012. And Congress really just loved this idea. And the two things you mentioned, coverage and costs, like, hey, we're going to really drive costs down with these and really get this out to the small employers. And there's truth to that. And it has happened in certain ways. But I think what we've seen the marketplace realize is that we put this party in charge of this thing, the pooled plan provider. And the statute says that you're responsible for all this stuff, that if you don't comply with substantially all requirements under ERISA and the code, you're in big trouble. So this notion of you must get it right, you're a professional fiduciary in charge of it, with let's make it super cheap, that's not entirely compatible. So I think what's emerged is PEPs are actually the kind of complete fiduciary solution. They're the complete outsourcing solution. They're not necessarily the cheapest option. There's probably always a cheaper option, but they're being used in kind of a barbell. So I think what we've seen is that there's the upper end and there's the lower end of the marketplace. So larger plans are gravitating to PEPs, and they're saying, we don't want the risk of being the principal name fiduciary. We appreciate getting out of the middle of these responsibilities. We appreciate that there's an audit that is centralized and other features of this thing. And then at the lower end of the marketplace, if you think about small employers, they just don't want to do this stuff. They want to hit a button. Where do I plug this in? And can I please forget about it? And of course, that doesn't always work well. We need them to do their payroll, for example. But it's really pretty sensible for small employers to not be in charge as well. So we're seeing it being adopted at both ends. But it's not necessarily Congress' original vision that it's going to be so cheap that everyone will have one. That's not the, that It doesn't work that way, but it is working.
Right, and it's about the coverage that I guess was my point. So bad on me, Michelle. I want to come to you because Pete brought up ERISA, and we're all fond of ERISA, and there are fiduciary responsibilities. At least most of us are fond of ERISA. There are fiduciary responsibilities around retirement and retirement plans from investments. Pete laid some of this out, but under a PEP, let's talk about the fiduciary responsibilities for a participating employer, and then we can, or let's start with the PEP itself. What are the fiduciary responsibilities? Then we can talk about the participating employer. So what are some of these fiduciary responsibilities?
Sure, I think Pete definitely hit on it. It's really to perform all the administrative duties that complies with ERISA. We have to register as a pooled plan provider with the Department of Labor. We have to register that whole PEP entity with the Department of Labor. Within the PEP, we have to acknowledge in writing that we are the named fiduciary. We have to ensure that the plan is bonded. And then even getting more granular, as within the PEP environment and our administrative and fiduciary responsibilities are going to include making sure that, all of the documents and amendments are completed, they're signed, they're up to date. We have to track, all of the contributions and census. We have to prepare and scrub annual census. We have to make sure that notices are being delivered timely. We're also overseeing plan vendors. So some of the outside vendors that are embedded within the PEP environment, we have to make sure they're performing their duties. They have the correct checks and balances in place. Data tracking, plan eligibility with data. That's definitely something that's big. We want to make sure participants are entering into the plan timely. We want to make sure that if they're not eligible, they know when that date's coming up. And then the calculation of employer contributions. I mean, the list certainly goes on and on.
Yeah, and to Pete's point, Michelle, I mean, if you're a smaller business, you really want to have your lens focused on delivering the benefit, but also doing the day-to-day job. And I think that is one of the challenges of running a large retirement plan or running a retirement plan is doing all the things that you all just laid out.
Yeah, and I think, Pete definitely hit the nail on the head in his observation where small plans or small businesses simply don't want to mess with it. Offloading those fiduciary responsibilities in a PEP environment really allows the PPP to take on all of those responsibilities. And then that small business owner, one of their main responsibilities is going to be providing good data. They need to make sure that the vendors receive good census, good contribution information, good compensation information. And we have to accomplish that through one education, but we can also accomplish that through integration, payroll integration, trying to connecting with their payroll vendors and such.
Yeah, and Pete, I want to come to you. Last question before we go to a commercial break, because of course, got to pay the bills. What role, I think you both have really talked about the pooled plan provider, but I want to ask you specifically about the role of the participating employer. What's the role there? And then I'll come to you, Michelle. We can kind of go back and forth. But what's the role here of the participating employer? Is it just to sign the paperwork to facilitate the data, and then they're done? Or is there a little bit more to it?
Jeff, I've been told at one time or another in the marketplace that when salespeople sell PEPs, they say, you don't have to do anything. You don't have any responsibilities. And not true. Of course, there are some that remain. But I did have an example of a client who took that a little too literally, and they weren't submitting payroll. They weren't submitting any information or any contributions. They just thought they didn't have to do anything. So that's probably a bad example of how to do one of these programs. But there's a paradigm. There's a paradigm that the retirement industry has had for almost 50 years now. ERISA is coming up on its anniversary. That we the industry, we don't want to be a fiduciary, and so we put this stuff on the employer. And there are a couple hundred responsibilities like those that Michelle was describing. And who owns them? And historically, we've had the client own them. And so there are a whole bunch of things going on behind the scenes that they're not aware that are their responsibility. And they don't go wrong most of the time, but there are probably 120 of them that go wrong a lot. And so as an employer, you just kind of want to be able to say, hey, you're taking care of that stuff, right? And I think the sales pitch of the industry has been, yeah, we got you. We're taking care of it. But that's the paradigm has been the legal contracts do not back that up. That what they say is that the employer is responsible for all these things. And it leads to a lot of side effects that are not good for the employers and work that they ought to be doing. So I think one of the key issues here is that the PEP flips that around. It puts the pooled plan provider in a position of actually having to pay attention to this stuff. And if they're sticking to the spirit, and we think the letter of the statute, they're accepting all those responsibilities truly in place of the employer. But the employer still has to do stuff. They got to do their payroll. They got to send in their end of year questionnaire and give us right information about their company and their people and whether their family members are working in the company. And they need to scrutinize their census at the end of the year. It's not a push button affair. They need to pay attention. They may need to get a bond, and that's an open question. But they're supervising, you know, they're making a fiduciary decision. Is this the right thing for my people? But that's it. In a well-drafted PEP contract, that's it. Versus we'll do 20 things, only those 20 things. And the unspecified remainder is on you, employer.
Yeah. Michelle, go ahead. I want to get your thoughts, and then we'll go to a commercial break.
No, I completely agree. And I think the employer must monitor the PEP plan itself in terms of the vendor that they've selected or the program that they've joined. They need to ensure that the plan is running smoothly. They need to monitor the fees for reasonableness. So they still have, you know, a handful of items that are extremely important.
Yeah, you don't get to just wring your hands and, you know, that is just not, no matter what, if you're offering a benefit, you don't get to wring your hands. Well, Pete, Michelle, I need to take a very quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about performing a CFEX assessment. You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM. Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries. 33 yeah. years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network. Well, Pete, Michelle, thanks so much for staying with us. Really appreciate you hanging around for segment number two this morning.
Glad to be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
This is a fun conversation. Pete, I want to come back to you because both you and Michelle talked about the setup and very important to set up the plan appropriately, the pool plan provider, the participating employers, getting it right initially, because if not, you're going to have problems downstream. Let's talk about a CFEX assessment. You actually did one. I want you to talk about the assessment in general, what it's like, how do you perform it, and then we can get into some of the findings with Michelle.
So CFEX is the Center for Fiduciary Excellence, and They're an international organization who evaluates fiduciaries and fiduciary advisors and stewards on their practices. And there are different kinds of organizations that can be evaluated, but there was a need for a new standard, which the center has created for pooled plans and for operational fiduciaries. So there's a new operational fiduciary standard of excellence for the Center for Fiduciary Excellence. And the concept is, hey, if there are hundreds of things that an employer is supposed to be doing, how do they know if they're getting done? And how do you evaluate that? And I think that the industry has done a really good job on the investment side. We've learned how to evaluate fiduciary responsibility on the investment side, but that is only half the picture. The operational side is incredibly complex, tax code stuff, hundreds of little nitpicky things. And we tend to kind of push it in a corner and say, that's the TPA who's going to take care of that. That's a record keeper's problem. But it goes wrong all the time. And nobody really knows how to dig into it. So what we've done with the center is said, let's evaluate this based on the pooled plan provider as a proxy for what every plan sponsor historically has had to go through. We're putting you at the head of this thing. What does that mean? And how do we put you in a position to be able to say that your service provider provides an answer to the question, how is this getting done for each thing that has to get done? That's what the new standard is about.
And Michelle, you went through this process for your pooled plan provider, your PEP. Do you have some, I always like case studies. So any findings you can share, what how that process went?
No, absolutely. So the certification process on our product, once it was in production, was I feel it was quite long and rigorous, actually. We completed a very lengthy due diligence questionnaire, you know, focusing on sales and setup. We focused on record keeping. And then you can even dissect record keeping further into like the payroll monitoring and the validation and transactions and statements and disclosures. We also dug really deep into the plan documents and our amendment process, the plan design elements around the PEP. So we've created ours with a few bumpers. And what did that look like? And what type of exceptions would we allow? And then moving on into the compliance side of things, the testing, how do we handle testing failures, government filings, reporting? And then, of course, I think one of the most important aspects is the security and disaster recovery of our platform, of our systems, of our software. Not only did we complete that questionnaire, but then we had a series of meetings. We brought in each of our operational leads for each of those functional areas, and we sat down and had a lengthy discussion and really dove deep into the actual processes and then had discussions. And I would say on the flip side, that really allowed us to, you know, pause and reevaluate the processes that we had in place and really get feedback on where we might need to fine tune some things or make some changes or add some additional tracking areas. But it was long. It was good though.
Good, long, but good. Pete, I want to come back to you because as you were describing this certification, this assessment, and listening to Michelle, it's almost like when you hire an advisor and you look at the form ADV, and in that form ADV, it lays out everything. I mean, it's almost like the equivalent of that, a certification about the operations and the functionalization of this plan so that you can feel comfortable that it's operating as it should.
And I think it's operating as it should is the key. And of course we can't, you know, we can't say for any given plan or client, hey, we know that plan is working well. So what we're evaluating is the compliance infrastructure and saying, hey, is this infrastructure, is this setup, this organization likely to handle all the stuff that has to be handled in a way that's going to get it done right? So if you're putting something back on the employer, if you're saying, for example, hey, here are the documents that have to be delivered to participants on certain intervals in certain ways, whether electronically or by mail or follow up and track down missing people, here's all that has to be done. Who's going to do it? Well, employers tend to not be very good at that. So if we put it on them, That is nothing wrong with that by law. It doesn't work as well as if someone like July and Michelle handles it for them. And so where the industry is steering is how much of this stuff can we get off the plates of the employer? And it's not all off. Sales pitches to the contrary, you know, we're not there yet. And so this just provides an objective mechanism for evaluating, hey, is there a way of getting it done? And is there a clear contractual arrangement that says, hey, if we're not getting it done and you're leaving it on me, the employer, I know that.
Yeah. And Michelle, just let's talk a little bit about the PEP. I want to, case studies are always helpful for the audience. How large, how many participating employers are part of this PEP?
No, absolutely. And just to preface that, so before we even started our PEP, we actually hired an outside consulting firm to walk us through the PEP landscape and to assist us with the interpretation of the regulations. They were newly issued. We wanted to make sure that whatever we set up really followed the regs to a T. We wanted to ensure that the product we were developing was solid from a fiduciary perspective. It was operationally streamlined and also, financially attractive to prospective clients. So today we have over 350 adopting participating employers, around 6,000 participants, a little over 88 million in plan assets. But one of the interesting things is approximately 42% of all of our new bundled plans that we sell go into our PEP.
I think that's amazing progress. And again, you're starting maybe smaller employers, so the assets aren't going to be as big as some of the mega plans. But Pete, this certification, this assessment, is it something that you should do on an annual basis every couple of years? Because I would imagine, just like everything with ERISA and due diligence, it's not enough to just do it once. You should probably continue to look and evaluate your offering to make sure, A, it's competitive, but B, it's doing everything that you want it to do and you're enhancing it along the way.
It is an ongoing process and rules change, so we do have to keep up with it. And the general flow of it is the initial round's the hardest. We sometimes refer to it as the chore grind in my firm, and but it is a lot of work. But you get a lot out of it. You get a sense of, hey, we've really looked at everything we ought to be looking at. Round two is a reduced version. So every other year, you can expect a heavier version and then a more checking in version on off years. But there are new laws. So we have Secure 2.0 now, which is making Michelle's life fun. Yeah. And, we have to integrate that into the process.
Yeah. And Michelle, it sounds like you're going to get a little bit of a reprieve on this, the next round of evaluations and assessments.
Gladly, we'll take it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Michelle, Pete, great to see you. Thanks so much for stopping by the program. And we look forward to having you back again very soon.
Great. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Jeff.
That wraps up this episode of BRNAM. Have a topic of interest, someone you think we should talk to, drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the latest curated news in lifestyle, wellness, finance, tech, so much more, all in one place, check out today's edition of our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. Want to search our archives, check out our latest content? Well, then visit our website. We're back again tomorrow with another edition of BRNAM. We'll have another very special guest. Until then, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving. And don't forget, roll with the changes. Now is your opportunity to co-create content around any topic on the First Lifestyle and Wellness Network. Reach a global audience through our platform and co-own exclusive branded content. All of our programs are available on demand and also as audio-only podcasts, so you can take us on the go. Broadcast Retirement Network, available anytime, anywhere, and on any device.